Nobody could believe it. The stone had been rolled away and the cave grave was empty. The man had been declared dead. His body had been placed in a tomb. A stone covered the opening to keep away wild animals and grave robbers. And yet here he was, standing before them. The scene was beyond unbelievable. Was it a ghost? Was it some sort of magic trick? Was it a demon in disguise? Or was this the very power and presence of God bringing light in the dark and defeating death with the power of life, new life? What would you think if you had been there? What would you have done? What do you think you would feel? If you saw a dead person come back to life and walk towards you, would you wait for a hug or a handshake or a kiss? Would you back away or even run? In the whole history of the world, few people have actually experienced the type of event we are describing. But the people who traveled with Jesus saw this remarkable sign of God's power present in Jesus on more than one occasion. They never expected to see a dead person return to life. It just feels too impossible. But history records that these miracles happened. The scene I described is the moment that Jesus called out in a loud voice, "Lazarus, come forth." The gospel writer records in John 11:44, the dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. And Jesus said to them, "Take off the grave clothes and let him go." John 11 tells the most amazing story of a conversation between Jesus and his friends that took place during about a week. Jesus' followers had confidence that he could heal the sick and perform all kinds of miracles. So they asked him to please come and heal his friend Lazarus, who was sick. Listen to the text in John chapter 11, starting with verse 3. So the sisters sent word to Jesus, "Lord, the one you love is sick." When he heard this, Jesus said, what did he say? My text is wrong. "This sickness will not end in death. It is for God's glory, so that God's Son may be glorified through it." Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister Mary and Lazarus. So when he heard that Lazarus was sick, he stayed where he was for 2 more days. Why did Jesus wait around 2 whole days while Lazarus was dying? It's interesting and puzzling to me that Mary, Martha, and Lazarus had to experience a very difficult time of extreme suffering, grief, and loss because Jesus loved them. It sounds contradictory. It feels unkind and unloving. Why would Jesus allow them to suffer? What possible good could come out of that suffering? So in verse 11, Jesus told his disciples, "Our friend Lazarus has fallen asleep, but I am going there to wake him up." "Yes," they reply, "Lord, if he sleeps, he will get better." And Jesus told them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and for your sake, I am glad I was not there, so that you may believe. Now let us go to him." Now that's a strange conversation. On his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. Many Jews had come to Mary and Martha to comfort them in the loss of their brother. When Martha heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him. But Mary stayed at home. Now, if you spent time in our Alpha Couples course, then maybe you recognize Martha behaving like a rhinoceros, charging out to confront, and Mary as a hedgehog, hiding away in her sadness. Lord, said Martha to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Frustration, hope, like you could have done something. That's faith, but frustration, you didn't. Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. And Martha answered, I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day. And Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. Do you believe? Well, yes, Lord, she replied. I believe that you're the Messiah, the Son of God who's come into the world. Not exactly a straight answer. The story tells that Martha went to get Mary and bring her quickly. Martha comes and says to Jesus, weeping at his feet, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Now, perhaps like Mary, Martha, the other disciples, you have blamed God for your suffering, your grief, your loss. I know I have. Sadness and pain can easily turn into anger. It's human nature to feel that if we know who to blame, then we might be able to explain away some of our pain. Now, something remarkable in this story is that Jesus understands exactly what is happening, yet he allows it to take place because he has a greater purpose in mind. It's almost as if Jesus is thinking, I know it's human nature to blame. I know you're blaming me. I understand. I know you. I get you. Jesus was very present with these people that he loved. As he stood there, present with them in their grief and their pain, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. He was not in a hurry to resolve the situation. He understood that God's good purposes would be accomplished in their lives. He also understood that God is never in a hurry. Peter later wrote, God is patient with us. He wants everyone to have the best opportunity to turn from blame to belief, from darkness to light, from death to new life. Verse 37 says, some of those people standing there said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? And Jesus said, did I not tell you that if you believed, you will see the glory of God? Let me ask you a question. Do you see the two competing perspectives? Nate might say, if you were here last week or watched online, you heard Nate say, two different lenses, remember? So, which pair of glasses? Couldn't he have solved this? If you would believe, two competing perspectives. What are the emotions that are present? Can you feel them? I wonder if you can name in your mind three different emotions that are not sadness or anger. Couldn't this man, Jesus, have kept that guy from dying? And Jesus, didn't I tell you if you believed, you'll see the glory of God? Well, they took away the stone. And Jesus looked up and he said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I know that you always hear me. But I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, so that they may believe that you sent me. Now, Jesus allowed and he accepted all of the sadness, all the pain, all the grief, the misunderstanding, the disappointment, the disillusionment, questions, anger, blame. Jesus was not surprised. He was not irritated or annoyed. He was not frustrated, but he was not in a hurry. He was purposeful. He had a plan. His plan was that everyone present would believe that he was sent from God. Jesus was not only sent by God, he was sent from God. Jesus was more than the Messiah foretold by the prophets. Jesus was saying that he was the very Son of God. When Jesus called Lazarus out of the darkness into the light, back from death into life, this was the seventh sign of John's gospel. Now, the gospel writer tells us that if all the miracles and amazing anecdotes concerning Jesus were told, the world could not contain all the books that would be written. When I said it's a seventh sign, it's because we've had a series of all the signs. So all the world couldn't contain the books. Now, I know that's hyperbole, an exaggeration, but if we considered every individual's unique experience of how Jesus' presence and power impacted them, we would need all of eternity to gratefully share and talk about his mercy and his kindness and power to bring us to a place of belief instead of blame. I find it fascinating that Jesus told his friends who he was. He showed them what he was capable of. He promised that he had a purpose that would become clear in the right time. But somehow, Jesus' patience and humility in helping and serving others without promoting himself seemed to be among the very reasons that even his disciples eventually felt disillusioned. Judas Iscariot is a clear example of how our human nature works. Judas wanted to believe in Jesus, but he wanted to believe in himself even more. Judas had his own agenda. He had his own motives. He was smart. He seemed trustworthy. The disciples trusted him the whole time they knew him. The chief priests trusted him enough to pay him in advance. But Judas was apparently impatient. He possibly felt that Jesus needed his help to move things in the right direction. His impatience led to doubt. His doubt brought annoyance and frustration. Judas desperately wanted a better life for himself and for his people. Can you relate to Judas? I can. I can get frustrated with waiting. With waiting and expecting someone else, especially God, to do something. And when I don't see the results that I'm hoping for, I decide to fix things myself. I, John, have learned the hard way that no matter how bad things are, I can always make them worse. It's human nature to blame instead of believe. Blaming comes from misunderstanding mixed with a lack of belief. Judas didn't really believe that Jesus really meant it when Jesus said, follow me. Judas seemed to think that Jesus needed him to help make something happen. Perhaps Judas thought he could help Jesus along if he created a situation where Jesus would have to react with power. Perhaps Judas believed in Jesus, but he really wanted a different kind of miracle. Perhaps Judas believed what many people believe. If Jesus really does miracles, and if he really loves me, then he will do the miracles that I need him to do in the way that I want and in the time that I tell him. If Jesus could bring Lazarus back from the dead, surely he could resist the Romans and the religious leaders who accused him falsely before King Herod and Pontius Pilate. If Jesus could change water into wine, these were the signs, perform healing miracles, if Jesus could multiply a small boy's lunch into food for thousands, if Jesus could walk on the water, calm the storm, and give sight to a blind man, then surely he must be sent from God. He is the Word, the Logos, the life force of the universe made flesh, living among us. He is God incarnate. That's what Jesus was telling them. I don't know what Judas or the other disciples thought Jesus might do when faced by an angry mob trying to arrest him. Jesus had walked away from angry mobs before. No one had ever laid a hand on Jesus in anger. Perhaps they were hoping to see Jesus turn into a superhero with unusual physical power, a supernatural response against their enemies. But you know the story. The disciples fled in fear. They were filled with disappointment and despair. Peter tried to fight, but Jesus stopped him. And in the confusion that followed, Peter cursed and he swore to all who were listening that he did not even know Jesus. Judas, in a final act of desperation, ran into the darkness and hung himself. Now Judas created space for dark thoughts and hard feelings. He allowed dark shadows to grow strong in his mind and in his heart. The darkness in his heart became the opportunity for Satan, the prince of darkness, to take control in his life. And Jesus knew what was happening. That night, as they shared their Last Supper, Jesus told the disciples what Judas was about to do. Then Jesus said to Judas, "What you're going to do, do it quickly." And Judas got up and he went out into the night, into the darkness. I notice again that Jesus was not worried. He was not in a hurry. He trusted completely God's purposeful plan for that moment, for that night, for every day of his life. By Friday afternoon, Jesus had been betrayed, falsely accused, beaten, condemned, and cruelly nailed to a cross on a hill outside the city. A crucifixion on a cross was designed to intimidate and terrorize the local population. And since ancient times, the Jews considered crucifixion to be a curse. The scripture says that there were two people next to Jesus. One of them said to Jesus what many people were thinking. "If you really are the Son of God, save yourself and us." But as I said before, you know the story. God had a plan. Jesus knew that his death was not really the end. Jesus was making a way. Through the darkness and the despair, He was confronting the very one who had entered into Judas, the prince of darkness himself, that ancient serpent who tempted Jesus in the desert, brought all his powers of darkness and destruction to destroy the work of God on the earth. It was Friday, about midday, and darkness came over the whole land from about 12 until 3 o'clock. 15 horas. Darkness in the sky, darkness throughout the land. You remember the words that Jesus spoke from the cross. Forgiveness for his enemies, hope for the other thief at his side, help for his mother. Do you remember that infamous cry, Eloi, Eloi, lama sabachthani? My God, why have you forsaken me? That apparent cry of anguish and abandonment is the opening line of Psalm 22. Read and meditate on Psalm 22 and watch the flow from suffering and loss to faith and belief that ends in healing and hope. So what am I saying? Jesus faced the greatest grief, pain, suffering, and loss. But he never lost his faith and trust and hope in God. Meanwhile, his disciples despaired. Their grief was too great. They had seen Jesus raise Lazarus from the dead, but they felt they had all failed when he could not come down from the cross. And you know the story. Jesus cried out, "It is finished." And he was declared dead as they plunged the spear up into his side. He was buried in a tomb. Like that of Lazarus, it was really a sort of small cave. And the Jewish authorities told the Roman authorities that someone might try to steal the body and pretend there had been another miracle. So the Romans posted guards, and they sealed the tomb so that no one would dare approach. It was over. As Jesus said, it was finished. But what was finished? We know the devil deals in darkness, but the psalmist reminds us that even the darkness is light to God. There is no place, space, or imagination beyond the reach of God's purposes and power. And you know the story. On the morning of the third day, Friday afternoon, Saturday, and Sunday is the third day, when the Jewish Sabbath had passed and the sun had risen, the disciples discovered the greatest miracle of all. God had spoken, "Let there be life." Jesus was alive. And he was present in time and space. But somehow he was not limited to time and space. Later, the disciples, the apostles, would write that Jesus had descended into hell. He broke the curse of sin. He defeated the power of death. He set captives free and led them in a triumphal procession. He had a busy Saturday. After his resurrection, Jesus met with his disciples and he spoke words of peace and forgiveness. For almost 7 weeks, he explained to them the scriptures that now had a whole new meaning and significance. On one occasion, Paul wrote that Jesus appeared to more than 500 people at once. Jesus also met with his brother James, who had resisted the idea that his brother Jesus was the Christ. James' life was transformed. He became the leader of the church in Jerusalem, the moderator of the first church council, and the author of the book of James. When Jesus called Lazarus to come out of the tomb, their grief turned to joy. But when Jesus returned to life, there were no words to describe the revolution taking place in the hearts and minds of his followers. Christ is risen, someone would say. And the people would reply, Christ is risen indeed. Jesus had made a way. He made a way through the darkness, through the despair, through the grief, the suffering, and loss. His followers were called people of the way. Still today, we struggle to comprehend the significance of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection. Much of the meaning actually remains a mystery. But the resurrection is a reality. Jesus provided a way. He is the way maker. Hear his words in your heart. Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they're doing. Today, you will be with me in paradise. Father, into your hands I commit my spirit. When Jesus met with his disciples after the resurrection, he anticipated their confusion and uncertainty. Peace be with you. As my Father sent me, so I'm sending you. And with that, he breathed on them and said, Receive the Holy Spirit. And later he said to Thomas, Stop doubting and believe. And Thomas said, My Lord and my God. And Jesus told them, Because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. That's you and me. This morning I requested a song to complete this part of the service. And we're actually going to have two songs. The last one, the second one, is called Waymaker. And the message of this song is an affirmation of faith. So in these next moments, while we sing, I just want you to think. Maybe place your hand on your heart and affirm your faith. Or hold the hand of the person you love at your side. My person is down with the children. And give their hand a squeeze to affirm your faith together. But today, I affirm that Jesus is alive by the power of God. He has made a way out of darkness into light, out of death into life. Christ is risen. He is risen indeed. So let's affirm our faith together as we listen to and sing these closing songs.